friends. So this is my 14th update, and it covers basically the last 3 days, and there's a lot that's been happening in the last 3 days. We've seen the Trump administration is playing good cop, bad cop, trying to incrementally increase the pressure on Iran, but Iran's not playing the same game. What we saw was Israel hitting the South Pars gas fields. So far, there hasn't been major attacks on gas and oil fields and the infrastructure that builds up to that. So we've kind of avoided most of those hits. Some oil storage facilities have been hit, but basically that's been mostly avoided. Now, Israel has hit, and that's the bad cop. And Trump is the good cop. Where did they go? As you can see in this... as you can see in his Truth Social post, oh, this won't happen again. You shouldn't react like that. They overreacted back, Iran. Oh, we're going to make sure this doesn't happen again. Yeah, this is the good cop, bad cop approach. And they're going to continue escalating this way. It's step-by-step escalation. That's what they think. Iran has hit back and hit back hard, and not just hit the Qatar gas liquid gas facilities. They've hit in Riyadh, they've hit the Tel Aviv refinery, which you can see videos of it, of explosions happening at the Tel Aviv refinery on the screen here. And they've hit a lot of places. Iran is not escalating step by step or allowing the U.S. to escalate step by step while doing nothing. Iran is, you might say, overreacting, but that's the proper way. You want to play crazy man in the house, in the neighborhood, we'll play crazy man times two in the neighborhood. We're not going to let you get away with it. We'll for every one step you're taking, we'll do three steps. How far do you want to go? What we're looking at right now, I mean, with the damage that's already done, the reality is that the what the U.S. has unleashed, is, along with Israel, is massive, massive economic damage. We were looking at, the world was already heading kind of toward a recession. The reason the oil prices were falling was because demand was falling. Demand was falling because manufacturing was falling. And the world was looking at a possible light recession. We're looking at a major recession right now. Those LNG plants that have been hit, they're going to be offline for a long time after this conflict's over. And this conflict, there's nobody knows when this conflict is going to be over. Iran has closed the straits. Well, kind of closed the straits. Its ally or the friendly nations can pass. They pay $2 million now for passage per tanker, which, by the way, they more than make up for when they sell the oil. Or the gas that they're carrying. Well, mostly it's not oil. But for the most part, everything is incredibly damaged. What we're going to see right now, you see this video from Bessent. And Bessent is talking about how they're going to... And Bessent is talking about how they're going to counter the increase in oil prices by the Straits of Hormuz being closed...
effort. We had a break the glass plan across the administration and at Treasury. We unsanctioned Russian oil. We knew that there were about 130 million barrels on the water, and we created supply that is beyond the Straits of Hormuz. So we anticipated this. We knew that there could be a temporary, and I want to emphasize temporary, choke point there. And there was 130 million barrels of floating storage. In the coming days, we may unsanction the Iranian oil that's on the water. It's about 140 million barrels. So depending on how you count it, that's 10 days to 2 weeks of supply that the Iranians had been pushing out. That would have all gone to China. In essence, we will be using the Iranian barrels against the Iranians to keep the price down, you know, for the next 10 or 14 days as we continue this campaign.
By unsanctioning Iranian oil that's on boats to sell. It's like they unsanctioned Russian oil. Yeah, whatever. Thank you for allowing us to sell the oil we're selling anyways. This is the illusion of the Trump regime trying to create on the world stage that they're actually doing something and they're in control. They're not in control. They can no more sanction the sale of Iranian oil than they can stop the sun from rising in the east. Same as the Russian oil. And the ships, again, as I said before, has been said, the ships full of oil that were standing off shore was because oil prices have been dropping. They were being used as mobile storage facilities. Iran has continued selling its oil, by the way, through all of this. So they're going to lower oil prices. What they're trying to do is they're trying to talk the market down because they've realized it's gone so high. It's not just profit. Sure, I'm sure they're invested. Their donor class is making money off of profit. But the problem is if you get too much of an oil price hike, you start getting what's called demand destruction, which basically means oil energy is too expensive. People start cutting back. Industry starts cutting back and you start going into a major recession. And nobody needs your energy, your carbohydrate. Your energy because nobody's manufacturing or manufacturing very little. So the energy demand is going to go down regardless of what the price is. And they're trying to back off of that right now. So they're trying to make this illusion that McNamara said we're going to, or actually we had this planned out because Bessette is saying they were going to block the Straits of Hormuz. So we'll counter by letting them sell their oil. I mean, think of what this man is saying. I mean, this man is so full of crap. It's just coming out of his ears at this point. I mean, you could smell the stench across the television set. This is ridiculous, but this is what they're playing because they've gone too far. Look, LNG, you know, if it all opens tomorrow, it's going to take months to maybe even years to fix the damage that's been done to the Qatari facilities. If they're hitting the main oil fields, I mean, look at what's going to happen. I mean, if a lot of that equipment is heavily damaged, refineries, you know, it's hard to destroy a refinery because they're huge. Most of the time when the Ukrainians hit Russian refineries, they're really not hitting the refinery per se. They're hitting the storage tanks because they burn real bright and pretty. You get a real pretty picture. Oh, look what we're doing. Yeah, see that flame? But that is a very limited damage, and storage facilities are easy to replace. Now, hitting refineries, problem with refineries is everything's under pressure and control, automatic control. So if you blow up any bit of a piping, normally the pressure gets cut, so fuel doesn't continue going down into the damaged pipe to spill or burn. However, if you do serious damage on refineries, I mean, you're hitting them and you're hitting them, hitting them, you're getting in a position where it's going to take a long time to replace because those vessels that are used in those refineries, they are made to order for the most part. Most of them are made to order. I know this because I was a supply chain director when we were doing the LNG plant in Technomont, Russia. We're doing the huge LNG plant in Amur, and also we're expanding the refinery, the Moscow refinery for Gazprom Neft. So I know quite a bit about this and how they're manufactured. And they're all manufactured to order, and they're manufactured manually, and it takes time. And depending how much damage is done, how much time is going to take. I mean, some of these vessels, some vessels may be only about a meter in length, and others are up to 80 plus meters in length. So manufacture, transfer, transport, setting them up, testing them for pressure again, and then you're testing by pressure by filling them up with water under high pressure, and then you drain it, you have to clean it, and then you get it in there to work. It all takes time, and that's not counting piping and any damage that has to be cleared up. Now, if you're hitting the wells, you get a whole different problem if you're hitting the wells. If those wells spark, then you have to put them out. That's usually done by bulldozer or by explosives. You probably damage the well. So the wellhead has to, whatever's left of the wellhead, you take it off, and you have to possibly redrill that well, or clear the damaged pipe and what have you that fell into that hole. And maybe you're going to have to redrill an entire new well. So you're looking at a lot more effort and a lot more money that's going to have to go in. And by the way, and all those Arab investments in the U.S., guess what's going to be draining out of the U.S. economy right now? Because that money is going to be flowing back to fix all the damage now Uncle Sam there and his partner in crime have committed. But the good thing is, you know, for all the damage that the Israeli economy's taken, they do have an insurance plan, and it's a sound insurance plan. Thankfully, the Israeli economy is not going to, I mean, it suffered. It suffered a lot. The refinery in Haifa got hit hard. Ivanport's been hit hard. A lot of other stuff been hit hard. But thankfully, you know, you can rest assured. You can breathe deeply. The Israelis are in no massive danger of their economy collapsing because they have a surefire insurance plan that no other country has at this level. It's called the United States taxpayer. And the taxpayer in the United States is going to be more than happy to sacrifice some more because they are that kind of people, and they're going to fix whatever's happening with the Israeli economy. You can listen right here right now about what's happening in Israel. Just hold up one second.
So days in the past 12 days, 14 Israeli civilians have been killed by Iranian ballistic missiles, and 2,000 Israelis were wounded. Why? Because
I'm sorry, is there a problem with the war you ordered?
Fires towards residential areas like my city. My city, which has no military bases or assets.
You don't get to play the victim card right now.
Tenfold.
This is a war Israel wanted. This is a war that you're cheerleading right now.
This is the kind of regime we're dealing with.
You don't get to play victim.
Okay, Anna.
The world.
של פינת הורי ברמת גן. וואו. שיור. כן, בטח.
Hope you enjoyed that commentary, because that is very important commentary to this point. And yes, the U.S. taxpayer is the backstop for the Israeli economy and any damage Israeli economy suffers. So Thankfully, we don't have to worry about Israel. It will get rebuilt. It will have its free medicine. It will have free education that it's always had. The U.S. taxpayer is rich enough. He can afford to support Israel. So thank you, the U.S. taxpayer. Iran, luckily, I'm for sure Russia and China will help rebuild Iran as a ally. And Iran has done a lot. And yes, you hear right here, Zelensky is complaining that Russian drones are now being used by Russian Shahids. Well, those are Garand drones are being used by Iran. Yes, they are. In fact, Russia is supplying Iran. Figure on that one. Oh.
And now Russia is giving the Iranians Shahid drones.
Yes, I'm sure. We saw some details from the one of the Shahids, which was destroyed in one of the countries of Middle East. It was Russian details. We know it because Iranians didn't produce it. So I think that means that Russians also helped them, like Iranians helped them at the very beginning of the war when they gave them Shahids.
But here's a picture of Ukrainian drones that were taken down over Lebanon that are now being used by the Israelis. But then again, you know, Ukraine is getting lots of money from the West, so it's sharing with the Israelis. See, those are Israeli drones helping clear the area of civilians on a permanent basis. I know they call this, they have other names for clearing an area of civilians by bombing them and driving them forward. I'm sure you can, in the comments, you can put down what those names would be for such actions. There's legal names for that. There's precedent set that, you know, that's probably not the best thing to do. Yeah, something around 1945, 1946, or a couple precedents set for that. But as we roll on, but of course, again, all of this takes money. I mean, we're looking at, the U.S. I'm sorry, allergies. The U.S., these videos, by the way, what you're about to watch is the damage done to U.S. bases. To the base in Qatar, I believe this is it. You can see the damage. Fifth Fleet headquarters is what it is. You can see some of the damage that was done, and Iran has continued to take that base apart using drones. So U.S. has suffered something around $150 billion, maybe more, dollars in damage just to those bases. And this war is costing about $1.5 billion every single day. So, of course, understanding there is no end in sight, Hegseth has stated that he's going to go for $200 billion. That's on top of the $1 trillion budget that the Pentagon already has. It needs 20% more to cover this little short-term adventure that Trump has launched on.
That as well. As far as $200 billion, I think that number could move, obviously. It takes money to kill bad guys. So we're going back to Congress and our folks there to ensure that we're properly funded for what's been done. For what we may have to do in the future, ensure that our ammunition is, everything's refilled, and not just refilled, but above and beyond. I mean, President Trump, as he said, rebuilt the military in his first term, didn't think he'd use it as dynamically in his second, but he had. So thank goodness he did that. And an investment like this is meant to say, hey, we'll replace anything that was spent. And now that we're reviving our defense industrial base and rebuilding the arsenal of freedom and cutting deals like our great deputy secretaries here is doing, long lead times on exquisite munitions, we're going to be refilled faster than anyone imagined. And I think, you know, we're also still dealing with the environment that Joe Biden created, which was depleting those stockholds and not sending them to our own military, but to Ukraine, which is when you, every time we reach back and look at any sort of a challenge we have, it goes back to, well, send it to Ukraine. Ultimately, we think this should be these munitions are better spent in our own interests at this point. And this kind of funding bill is going to ensure that we're properly funded going forward.
And that's, by the way, just to understand, you know, you got the Department of Veteran Affairs in most countries, like every other one. Department of Veteran Affairs would be part of the Ministry of Defense, or say, or the Department of Defense, or in America's case, Department of War. So that'd all be under the same umbrella. But in the U.S., it's separate. So when people are looking at what, you know, trying to compare apples and oranges, when they're comparing budgets, you need to drop that budget on top of the Ministry of War to compare budgets for other countries. And that, boy, does that increase that one quite a bit. Not that veterans get a whole hell of a lot, especially with medical care. Believe me, most of those butchers that work in federal hospitals for veterans, underpaid doctors. Why would underpaid doctors work there? Because they can't get a state license. And since this is federal property, they don't need a state license. So you get the worst of the worst working in most of the Veteran Affairs clinics. That's right. Unless you happen to be associated with a medical hospital, and good luck getting in line and getting to see somebody there. Well, for example, like Duke University or Chapel Hill Medical. Those are like half a year waits just to go see a therapist. So, yeah. But, yeah, he said, you know, he's going to need another $200 million. That's right, $200 million. Gotta love that. Now, Bessent, because, by the way, Bessent is not just the guy that can crash currencies, and he's done that for Soros, because he's Soros' right-hand man. He was the one that led the attack on the pound sterling. Why else do you think he's in the position he's in? Because he understands economics? Yeah, dream on. But he also understands military strategy. That's right. Bessent has stated that the U.S. will attack Karg Island. It will take Karg Island. The Marines will charge into Karg Island.
Effort. We had a break the glass plan across the administration and at Treasury. We unsanctioned Russian oil. We knew that there were about 130 million barrels on the water, and we created supply that is beyond the Straits of Hormuz. So we anticipated this. We knew that there could be a temporary, and I want to emphasize temporary, choke point there. And there was 130 million barrels of floating storage. In the coming days, we may unsanction the Iranian oil that's on the water. It's about 140 million barrels. So depending on how you count it, that's 10 days to 2 weeks of supply that the Iranians had been pushing out. That would have all gone to China. In essence, we will be using the Iranian barrels against the Iranians to keep the price down, you know, for the next 10 or 14 days as we continue this campaign.
Now, in this portion of our show, we shall discuss Karg Island, which you see a map of right now. That's a zoomed out map. And now we're going to look into a zoomed in map. Oh, yes, by the way, that is a Christian church. Nestorian, granted, they're considered heretics by the Orthodox Church back when it was the Orthodox Catholic Church. But still, it was a Christian church. And it still exists there. You know, it hasn't been destroyed, amazingly. Yes, I know. Unlike Western propaganda about Iran. But this is, as you watch... okay, these are videos, not videos, but pictures of the close-up of Karg Island. And yes, that's an airport, the airstrip that's, by the way, been bombed. You kind of need that airstrip to land supplies and troops. I mean, Karg Island is not very far from the mainland, but it's pretty damn far from any place that you're going to load things up on and try to drop in there. Obviously, what you're down to is boats. Dropping supplies in from air, which kind of has this little problem about, you know, getting hit by, air defense systems. Yes, I know what Trump said. Watch these two videos about what Trump said. And yes, that's an F-35 that just got hit by the non-existent, all-destroyed anti-air system, the invisible plane, which looks very visible in that display. The invisible plane got whacked by an anti-air missile. Amazingly, they apparently still have anti-air missiles. They didn't get the Trump memo that their anti-air systems are all destroyed. Or maybe just hitting underground and, you know, U.S. blew up a bunch of older stuff or decommissioned stuff that's been set up to look like it's ready to fire. Whoops. Yes, and those S-400s still haven't fired. Guess why? Because they're waiting, more than likely, they're waiting for the B-52s to arrive. And that's going to be a big picture when B-52s start getting missiles up the wahoo. So yes, that would be one hell of a hit on the Trump administration to see some B-52s go down over Iran. So more than likely, yes, they're waiting, and obviously their anti-air system works. It just took out a lifespan almost $1 trillion plane when you count all the expenses that take place to fix it, like Lockheed. Crews that can only, they're the only ones allowed to work on large chunks of the avionics, repulsion, and other systems at whatever $400, $500, $600 an hour that they charge, and so on. So you see Karg Island, and we'll go back now to Karg Island. You see Karg Island. Now look at the distance between the shorelines, anywhere up and down that shoreline, and Karg Island. 37 kilometers to the middle of Karg Island, 36 kilometers. Yeah, guess what? That's within FPV drone range. So there would be people sitting on that shoreline throwing drones in there to hunt down American Marines. That's a hunting ground. That's safari right there. That's called shooting fish in a barrel. Turkey shoot. That's another one. You know, however you want to call it, that's what the U.S. Marines are going to be facing when they're trying to man and garrison Karg Island. And any planes trying to come in there and get facing possible anti-air missiles coming in. Even things like Eagle Eye or a equivalent of a Stinger. That's bad if you haven't figured that out. So what's the U.S. military going to have to do to defend Karg Island is going to have to, it's going to have to expand to take the shoreline. But then it's going to be under fire of the shoreline, so it's going to have to continue expanding. Problem is the U.S. military is pretty damn limited. Okay, look, listen to what our dear general has to say.
Well, you know, that's the option that no one in their right mind would consider, to take on a nation of 90 million people, a gigantic land area ruled ruthlessly by the IRGC and the dictatorship of the Ayatollah. Who would, in his right mind, would take that on? We could do that. There's no question. You know, we've got still got 2.1 million men and women in the U.S. Armed Forces, and Iran's ability to resist a ground invasion, even a limited one, took on Karg Island or just tried to get a sanitary zone around the straits, would be achievable, but it would come at an enormous cost, and I don't think. The Trump administration is going to consider it. So they're stuck. They got to negotiate. They got to lift economic sanctions. They got to get inspectors back on the ground. The only objective we care about was their nuclear program, and that will remain untouched. We cannot go in with a commando raid and seize it. You know, it takes several thousand troops on the ground, heavy machinery, multiple days. That's not going to happen either. So I think Trump didn't think through this thing very clearly, and now he's stuck.
And yes, when he says there's 2.5 million American military, the reality is, first of all, there's only about 500,000 U.S. Army. Let's begin with that. And maybe 50, 60,000 more Marines. The majority of the U.S. military is Air Force, Navy, Space Force, whatever, Coast Guard. That's all U.S. military. They're not boots on the ground. Second of all, just remember, 500,000, doesn't that mean 500,000 fighting men? That's the military. That's the army. That there's the ash and trash. There's the drivers, the medics, the mechanics, the guys, the cooks and the finance guys, and on and on and on and on. You're looking at about 8 to 9 guys for every combat soldier. That's right. Draft, baby. Draft. Ain't gonna be any other way to get out of this once the boots on the ground go in except the draft. And I don't even know how the hell they're gonna get enough people. I mean, they're gonna have to bring back everybody that's that served at any time before and is still able to stand on 2 feet and send them in just as a plug before they can get the 30% that aren't overweight in to get them sped through some kind of basic and off there, and then get the next round of fat bodies in there to try drop their weight enough so they can get sent and so on. I don't know how the hell they're going to do this. That'll probably be, open revolts around the country, but hey, it's worth it. It's all worth it. Don't forget that. That's what Trump has said. It is all worth it. And he's already sending reinforcements. He says he's sending reinforcements to the 5,000 Marines. I haven't gotten there. The only thing I can think of reinforcements is more likely they're talking about 82nd Airborne or maybe 101st Airborne, which is air mobile helicopters. 10th Mountain's going to have to go in there sooner or later once they hit the mountains, which isn't that far into Iran before you hit mountains. They're trying to get El-Jilani into this war against the Iraqi militias and his Syrian head choppers. Of course, his Syrian head choppers are fighting other Syrian head choppers, and they're fighting the Lion Brigade, Shia Lion Brigade, and the Christians and the Alawites who are also fighting with him. So he's kind of got his hands somewhat busy. Never mind, the Israelis seem to be deciding that, he's El-Jilani's probably got too much. We don't really need him anymore. He's our servant. Let's go take some more Syria while we're at it. And they've started bombing into his area. That's the kind of shark tank down there. And the Turks just don't want to go in. Damn Turks, they don't want to go into this war. Why? Of course, we're seeing that some of the Kurds just don't learn. I mean, you kind of figure you'd have a perfect example there of what happens when the Syrian Kurds got backstabbed by the USO about 3 months ago and massacred. Maybe we'll have a run at it too and be America's biatches and go fight Iran for America. And maybe it'll be a better ending for us than it was for our cousins across the border. Some people don't learn, do they now? No, they don't. I'm going to have a talk with Halali again, Christopher Halali, who was a Kurdish officer, is an American officer too. Kurdish officer. We'll have a talk next week to discuss further how this is all rolling out and what his contacts are saying. Now, what we're looking at right now is John Kent. Look, I've got mixed. I've got mixed feelings about John Kent. First of all, I'm gonna tell you this. He's no hero. I'll tell you for two reasons he's no hero. First of all, he had such great convictions, and he knew that they were being manipulated, the U.S., and this was all going to go sour. He should have resigned when? He should have resigned right before this started, or the day it started, and gone to the public and said, look, this is the reality. We're being manipulated by Israel. This cannot go on. This cannot even start. He should have been the whistleblower. He wasn't. He resigns on day 18. Day 18, he resigns. And here's the thing. So he's one of, in my personal view, he's one of two things. At first, I just figured he's a rat. He's the first rat getting off the sinking Trump ship. That's what I thought at first, because that's the first thing. After him, there'll be others, and he's making a run for it, trying to save his skin and be the first one going, I can't do this anymore because this is wrong, blah, blah, blah. That's what it looked like at first. And then I listened to his interview with Tucker Carlson. And now I'm under more of the opinion that he's a plant. He's a Trump plant, because look what he's saying. It's not Trump's fault. No, no, no. We were manipulated by the Israelis. It's all, you know, we were the innocent bystanders. The Israelis lifted that, put that gun in our hand, lifted our hand up and told us, you've got to shoot. And we were just the innocent guys thinking, oh, we have to shoot. And that's, and Trump's really, Trump's a great president. Trump is number one. Trump, I mean, listen to him cheerleading. Second of all, I'll tell you this. So the guy's first wife was killed by ISIS. Okay, yeah, she was killed by ISIS. So when Trump put El Jilani on a pedestal, talking about it, this is my guy, I brought him to power, a ISIS commander, you had no problem with that? I mean, seriously, you had no problem with that. These are the same guys that killed your wife. Did you resign in protest then? Of course you didn't. So, obviously, you have no problem with that. That's a very interesting concept right there. Let's think about that. About the quality of this guy as a witness. Because I think this guy is very morally compromised. Absolutely morally compromised. And I think that he is a Trump plant. The Trump administration normally goes pretty hard after anybody coming out. And the people that walk out, they don't normally have lots of good things to say about Trump afterwards. The Trump administration is vicious, and they go for blood, and they go for the jugular. When we see this with Marjorie Taylor Greene as a prime example. She was the partisan for Trump until Trump backstabbed MAGA, and then she voiced it, and you know what happened after. So that this guy is allowed to talk so much as he's allowed, and all the praise he's putting on Trump, and he is a plant. He was, I mean, he's morally compromised. He's lying through his teeth. That the Israelis got the U.S. in? Sure, they did. That Trump went against his will and was tricked? I don't think so. I'm pretty sure Trump wanted the glory. The people around him puffing him up and are puffing him up. I watched this video right now. Yes, going against Trump is like going against God. Yeah, there you go. This is what you're being told in this video. So no, I don't for a second at this point think that Trump is some innocent bystander. He went in hard, and John Kent is there to get the pressure off of Trump. So we heard General McCarthy, the previous video that you saw, talking about 2.5 million, the greatest military force in the world. I mean, they're still living delusionally. We've seen that U.S. aircraft carriers are, which I've been saying, and I'm not the only one by far, there are much smarter people than myself have been saying this, for probably a good decade, if not two, that the aircraft carriers outlived its usefulness. And we see that now. I mean, it's as obvious as daylight. That the U.S. aircraft carriers are not capable of carrying out the mission they're supposed to be carrying out against a regional power. And sure, they're great for beating up on small nations. They can't do much to get back at you. But, you know, realistically, not so much against anybody that can reach out and touch you. They have to go so far away that they're inaccessible. And by the way, the Ford obviously is looking at more and more than just a soft mutiny. A soft mutiny was when 80% of the toilets were jammed up. And they're normally, from what I've been told, they get jammed up because people start flushing ropes and T-shirts down the toilets, and that backs them up. The filtration systems get backed up. But now with that fire that the Ford had, which was an arson, 600 beds are compromised on that. Because, and that's 30%, by the way, that's, if you think about it, it's 5,000 people living on there. I'm sorry, that's 30%, what am I saying? That's 6-7%. Or 12%. I have to stop and think of that one. So yes, I'm just proven badly at math at the moment, even though I did lots of engineering math. Oh, well. It happens. So that's 12% of the beds. So lots of people get to double up. But the point is, it's 30 hours, I think, was the report. They're putting that fire out. That's a soft mutiny going into serious sabotage at this point to get the aircraft carrier off the front. And you can imagine what's going on in those other vessels that are around there that have been out to sea just as long. to escort ships. What I love is Trump saying, you know, I'm not afraid of anything. I'm just not afraid of anything. That's how brave Trump is. He's not afraid of anything. The man that had five deferrals and never went to see service and never put a uniform on, real uniform, I'm talking about military school, real uniform on, he's not afraid of anything. He's not afraid of it becoming a Vietnam. This is never going to be a Vietnam. This is going to be a Korea, where you have the exact line of contact in the mountains, a front, in other words, and you're fighting against an organized enemy willing to die to defend his own land. Yeah, that's called Korea.
Mr. President, in Iran, because the Iranian regime has told Sky News, if you put boots on the ground in Iran, it will be another Vietnam. Are you afraid of that?
No, I'm not afraid of, I'm really not afraid of anything.
56,000, I think, Americans died in that war, or somewhere around there. Nobody remembers that war, by the way, and Vietnam overshadows it. Maybe 52,000, somewhere around there. All these guys had just gotten back from World War II. They just, got decommissioned, been home a couple of years, and off they went again. Because the U.S. military, you know, what they do, they called back everybody that had any kind of combat service, which is what I'm saying. They will do the same thing for this. It'll be Korea 2.0. So, what else have we got? We've got a few other things. Okay, so, as I was saying, Turkey doesn't want to be involved. Listen to what Turkish Foreign Minister Fidan says. He exactly points the finger at who's responsible for this war.
Bringing the crisis to resolution through diplomatic methods. It should be expressly indicated that the primary responsible party for this war that has drawn our region to an unprecedented crisis is Israel.
Right. So Israel, who's responsible for this war, is calling up now, doubling its reserve call up from about 200,000 to 450,000, so more than doubling, 2.5 times. There is my comeback on the math. In 2.5 times as many. You know, remember this. This is a country of about 9 million people. 450,000 young men and women are your prime age workforce. Never mind how many have already been called up. You're talking about economic collapse here because you're removing a very large chunk of your potential workforce from the economy to go fight this war of choice. It's an absolute war of choice, the war that they ordered. That seems to have come with a side dish of economic collapse. But again, as I've said, thankfully they do have a backstop. They do have an economic backstop. And with lots of land cleared out of the population, lots of settlers from the U.S. Who really want to exercise their Second Amendment rights in a foreign country by driving away local populations can come over and grab some more land and build their homes on the bones of those that lived before them there. CENTCOM is reporting that they destroyed a ballistic missile factory in Iran. Well, they destroyed the building. Whether or not there was anything in that building is, as usual, questionable. And I highly doubt, considering the Iranian underground missile cities, the videos you've seen previously, these tunnels full of drones and speedboats and missiles and everything else, these gigantic facilities. There's a picture of a hangar underground for fighter jets to land in and take off. It's like something, if you were a kid in the 80s, like G.I. Joe. The Cobra bases or the mountains and things like that. I mean, this is what you're looking at, these gigantic real mountains, except this one fantasy. So there's that. So, and Israel is, by the way, we'll go back to is getting hit. You can see the videos here. Israel's taking some serious damage that they've, I don't know from what, though. Because Trump has said, Iran doesn't have anything. I mean, probably with a slingshot, they shot down an F-35 because they don't have any air defense system. And without any ballistic missiles, they've already run out.
I thought it would be worse, much worse, actually. I thought there was a chance it could be much worse. It's not bad. And it's going to be over with pretty soon. We've obliterated their Navy. We've obliterated their just about everything there is to obliterate, including leadership. Their Navy's gone, their Air Force is gone, their anti-aircraft equipment is gone. We're flying wherever we want, Pete. We have nobody even shooting at us.
Yes, I'm sorry. I remember. How could I miss that? I need to call Trump. I need to call his administration. Tulsi Gabbard needs to know. I forgot. I didn't mention this. Iran had placed a giant order for Russian ballistic shovels. Yeah, I mean, the steel type of shovels, the good shovels with a good steel handle. They don't break easily. Yeah, they bought a bunch of those. And they even got multiple shovel head shovels. That when they when you throw that shovel, it splits into many, many smaller shovel heads, and they all come in together. Yeah, they've got massive amount of shovels. I forgot to, I'm just bad, man. I just forgot to tell them that. There's a whole ship of shovels that was heading down from Astrakhan down across the Caspian. Jeez, yeah. So now we know where those shovels went. I was looking around for a good new shovel on the market. There were so few shovels left in Russia. I was like, man, what happened to the shovels? I don't know. The orders aren't coming in. All the shovels are being diverted somewhere else. Now we know. Now we know. It's a hype. Man, if they got the hypersonic shovels, though, that's a pain, man. I don't know what you do with a hypersonic shovel. Especially if it's a stainless steel hypersonic shovel. Whoo, man, those babies. Those got some penetration head. Those hypersonic shovels. You know, they've been proven on the line of contact. NATO forces in Ukraine, they just couldn't handle those hypersonic stainless steel shovels. Highly tempered. Oof, man. Glide shovel head. Oh, yeah. There's a whole glide vehicle just built into that shovel head. Man, you could not shoot that damn thing down. Yeah, yeah. Speaking of damage, there's the U.S. Embassy on fire in the Green Zone. I'm telling you that they've been besieged by militias. And they're basically, as far as I know, I mean, nobody's talking about this. It's saying not a word about this in the Western media about the 2,000 U.S. troops. I don't know how many are still alive or combat functional in that area. And by the way, in the Green Zone, there's a lot of American families of diplomats and others, workers there too. Seem to be dropped, you know, to whatever fate awaits them, because I don't see any convoys punching through there to get them out. I don't know what kind of supplies they're getting in, or how many supplies they have, you know, day 19. How much food, how much rations, medical supplies, ammunition they have. I guess we'll learn this in a Netflix movie sometime in, you know, next 10, 15, 20 years after all this is over, if they're still on Netflix. Is there still a U.S. For anybody to care about? But yeah, these people have been dropped. CENTCOM's worried about hitting buildings that may be empty, but they don't seem to be very worried about getting their people out of being in a besieged location. Yeah, yeah. This next video is an RT team and I being hit. What they fired on him was a light... laser-guided bomb, glider bomb. This is launched by a fighter or a fighter bomber. He lases it, or somebody else can lase it. They can. You can use lase teams that go in there, lase the target, and the missile picks up that lase and goes in there. Or the fighter itself can lase its target. And it's about 110-kilo weapon. So the warhead's probably about 20, 30 kilos of high explosives. And RT was, to be honest, they weren't trying to kill these guys on purpose. I'll give the Israelis that. Because if they were, they would have lased right on top of Sweeney and would have taken him out right there. Easy enough. Israel does this. These are international journalists. The Israelis are trying to scare them by hitting right beside them. Sweeney got wounded. His cameraman got wounded too. He had shrapnel in his arm, but realistically speaking, if they wanted to wipe them out, they would have just lased right on top of them. These things will follow and are very, very accurate as long as there's a lace. I'm pretty sure they were trying to intimidate because they don't want the media to see what they're doing in Lebanon. But killing would have been a major rip and incident with Russia, as it was the Israeli. The Israeli ambassador was summoned to the Minister of International Affairs, and he got his arse ripping. But and relations between Russia and Israel are very, very strained. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, so yeah, they did that.
Further rocket attacks were reported against Nahariya and admitted.
RT correspondent Steve Sweeney and journalist Ali Reader are nearly killed by an IDF strike on a bridge near a Lebanese.
Well, the attack's details are now being discussed by pundits worldwide, and we can discuss it now with Denislav Kripivnik, former U.S. Army officer. Stas, good to have you on the program with us. The RT team was hit while filming near a Lebanese army base. I know you've seen the footage. How likely is it that they were deliberately targeted by the IDF on that bridge?
Well, you know, from my personal opinion, considering the munition that was used, which is a laser-guided small, relatively light bomb, it's about 110 kilograms. More than likely, they weren't trying to kill them. They were targeting them, but they were trying to frighten them, because quite literally, they could have put that laser beam right on top of Sweeney and dropped the bomb right on top of him. They've done this type of action before. They don't want to kill the journalists outright when they're on video like that, because that looks really bad. But they want to scare them or wound them, so they'll strike something somewhere nearby. And that's just an obvious strike. Again, I mean, that bomb could have ridden that laser beam right in on top of them. They hit nearby. It doesn't make it any less of a crime, because they're still trying to intimidate or trying to drive off the press so nobody sees what they're doing for the rest of for the civilians in the area.
Stas, my colleague Steve and Ali said that they could clearly see a fighter jet approaching while they were shooting video at this scene. And they also said they heard the projectile coming down. Does it look like the attack came directly from the jet itself? And what sort of damage do you think the IDF was trying to inflict? You say they're trying to send a message, but depending on what sort of munition was actually used, I mean, this could have been, you know, a huge amount of damage.
I mean, it's a high explosive warhead. The bomb is a glide bomb, so it flies in on the laser. There's a guidance unit. It has fins on it, on its wings, so it can maneuver to a degree, to a limited degree. So what happens is either more likely the fighter jet that actually released the munition was the one also targeting. Sometimes they can ride in on somebody else's lace. If there's a team on the ground, they'll lace it, and the munition picks up that lace and rides in on that lace. In this case, more than likely, it was being their team, or the location just off the side from their team, was being lased by that fighter. It released the bomb, and the bomb came flying in on that laser. So they knew who was there, obviously. They have the press credentials. They see the press vehicles. Whether or not they were trying to kill them, I think in this case they were probably trying to scare them, or at least wound them and to drive them off, which obviously didn't work for the Israeli side. But again, yeah, that fighter jet saw them. I don't know if he had asked for permission or he did it on his own initiative. I'm not sure how their chain of command works in this case. But what he did was, again, it was still an attack on the press.
Yeah, you know, the IDF has always denied targeting civilians, but considering all the evidence that we know so far, and despite bombing this bridge in broad daylight with journalists in the area, I mean, how plausible is this denial at this point?
Well, you know, the IDF never targets civilians. They're just not worried about if there's massive collateral damage while they're trying to get the one guy that they're targeting. So, you know, if they have to bring down four or five buildings full of civilians to get one guy, well, they're not targeting the civilians. They're targeting that one guy. He just happens to be around a lot of civilians. Oh, well, their problem. That's the attitude that the IDF always seems to have. Collateral damage isn't an issue. It's bonus points. That seems to be how they're going at it. Which is the same thing, by the way, that we see in Zelensky do, which really is the same thing that we see the U.S. military do. It's just bonus points. You know, oh, yeah, well, yeah, collateral damage is horrible. They just, I don't know why, but we just keep inflicting it an insane amount. I mean, if you look at the war in Ukraine, there's been about 20,000 civilian deaths. Of course, they're listed as all Ukrainians, but the reality is the vast majority of them are on the Russian side of the line of contact where the Ukrainians are targeting. And then you look at Israel, and there's somewhere around 500,000. You know, that tells you quite a bit of how they approach civilians. The same thing with the U.S. When one day raid on Tehran, I think the third or fourth day of this conflict, this illegal conflict, The U.S. killed about 1,500 people throughout the city, just carpet bombing, basically, hitting apartment buildings. We saw the same thing in Yugoslavia. We saw the same thing in Vietnam, 3 million civilian casualties. You know, North Korea, during the Korean War, American pilots were complaining there was no place left to drop bombs at Pyongyang that was still worth bombing. They had just destroyed the city and the civilians in it. This is not something new. This is a standard modus operandi for the way they fight. Now, of course, they don't want to come out and say that because it would look relatively bad, especially to your own civilians, whom you're trying to sell the war that we're the good guys. But the reality is that exactly is the modus operandi, and this is nothing new. This has been going on since at least World War II, where British and American forces burned 5 million Germans to death and several million Japanese without counting the atomic bombs. So, I mean, again, this is a standard approach from U.S., from Israel, from the Ukrainian proxies and so on. Bomb civilians. Bomb them as much as you can.
All right. We're going to leave it there. Stanislav Kropivnik, former U.S. Army officer. Stas, thank you.
Thank you.
What have we got? Well, I've got a clown world, but before that, I've got something much more serious, at least for Orthodox Christians and Catholic Christians while we're at it. 28th of February, so when all of this started, the Israeli government closed the Holy Sepultura Church. That is the site of the preparation of Christ's body, where Christ was buried, the empty tomb. It's a church inside of a church. Basically, the tomb was built up over the cave. The cave was leveled out. They had the Romans built a temple of Aphrodite on top of that. This is after Jerusalem was retaken and burnt. And then when Rome became Christian, St. Helena went there. They found it. They excavated it. They destroyed that the pagan temple. They found the tomb. The empty tomb for us Christians, and they built a small church over it, and the small church grew and became a giant cathedral. If you've never been there, I have been there. Really wanted to, my bucket list item was to go there and be there on Holy Pascha or Holy Christian Passover, Easter, it's called in the West. Now, obviously, that's probably not going to happen, but the Israelis closed it. This was this church complex, which is owned by, depending on what part you're in, by the Orthodox Church, the Catholic Church, and the Armenian Church, has never been closed like this, ever, since it's gone up. The Israelis have closed it. Holy Week is coming up. Easter, or Orthodox for the Catholics and the Protestants, and Passover or Pascha for the Orthodox is coming up, the day of the resurrection of Christ. They've closed the main church, which, by the way, is where the holy fire comes from during the service. And that's for us Orthodox, and it's quite literally flowing to all the other Orthodox churches in the world. It goes through, you know, to the main churches and then spread. They've closed it. Are they going to open it? No word. This is an attack on traditional Christianity like we've never seen before in this one embodiment of this church by the Netanyahu government regime. Well, don't worry, Americans, because your 250th anniversary is coming up. And not only are you in the middle of a unwinnable war that will probably cost lots and lots of lives, but you can commemorate this moment by buying your own Trump gold coin from the U.S. Mint. That's right. You can always remember this year. And your prodigy, 20 generations down, they'll go and think, and you'll be reading in textbooks and going, why the hell were you people that dumb to do the things you did? Well, hold that coin and go, yeah, baby. God bless. Pray for all the innocent people killed by this madness on all sides. And yeah, by the way, before I forget, Dubai has a major collapse in property values. They've raised 2 years of very high growth, and it's still collapsing. So we'll see. But this is just a symptom of everybody's leaving. The illusion's gone. The Middle East on the Persian Gulf, and Israel too. But Israel has a backstop. America, the Arabs don't. Just whatever they have in their pockets and their bank accounts, which is a lot, if they're willing to spend it on their own countries and not just live off of it somewhere in your country. That area is going to be damaged for years and maybe decades, depending how long and how far this goes. And if this goes through the summer, believe you me, 20% of the world's oil is gone off the market. Maybe 25. 20% of the world's gas, liquefied gas, is off the market. There are literally now going to be regions that are going to be, you know, those strategic supply are going to be running out. There are going to be regions in the world that will not have enough energy and are going to go, I don't know what kind of struggles this is going to, what kind of wars this will follow on. Thank you, Mr. Trump, the peace president. You've created more misery and war by your spineless stupidity, by the idiots that are surrounding you, the psychopathic heretics that are surrounding you of the Christian faith. The heretics of the Jewish faith sitting in Israel that are now your owners and masters pushed you into this and probably signed their own death warrant by their own idiotic stupidity. And you've just burnt a major energy region. And it's only going to get worse. And let's just hope it doesn't go nuclear. Because Israelis are out of options too. They got every front blown up on them because they've tried to conquer everyone at once with a population much smaller than everybody than this combined area that they want to grab. So now what are they going to do? I said, let's pray for everybody that's not guilty of these war crimes and pray for the ones that are guilty that they have a conscience that might finally break through and they stop this psychopathic idiocy. God bless.